Thank God it's Free Range. You are listening to Free Range Radio Friday with your host, Michael Elves. Pour yourself a beverage and turn up the volume, because here on 101.5 UMFM, the weekend starts now.
UMFM, this is Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. Jackie Shane's Walking the Dog, kicking things off for us tonight. That is from the album Any Other Way. There's also the name of a documentary telling Jackie Shane's phenomenal story, which is screening at the Cinematheque through September 15th. Earlier today, I spoke to co-director Luca Rosenberg Lee about the film. That conversation will air in just a few minutes. We'll hear some more Jackie Shane. I got Luca to make some picks. But before we get to that, Lauren Otter and Wendy and Lisa dropped a single this week. It is a cover of I Would Die For You, the Prince track. It was the first track, is part of an announcement that the Red Hot organization will be releasing a new compilation called Transa. 8 chapters, 46 songs spotlighting the works of trans and non-binary artists. Apart from this new track, Moses Sumney, Sam Smith, Beverly Glenn Copeland, Laura Jane Grace, and more included. Red Hot, I have had an affinity for this organization and for their music releases for, well, probably 30 years now. They released Red Hot and Blue, which was the first fundraiser, a collection of covers of Cole Porter, all to raise money for HIV/AIDS research. And they've continued to do some great work over the 3 decades or so that they've been releasing. We will play you that, then we'll get into my conversation with Luca Rosenberg Lee, and we've got more music for you coming up here on Thank God It's Free Range.
Thank you. not a man. I'm something that you'll never understand. I'll never be true, I'll never lie. And if you're evil, I'll forgive you by and by. Cause you, I would die for you. And darling, if you want me to, I would die for you. No, I'm not your lover, I'm not your friend. I am something that you'll never comprehend. No need to worry, no need to cry. I'm your messiah and the other reason why. Cause you, well, I wouldn't die for you. And darling, if you want me to, I wouldn't die for you. Cause you, I'm love. See, all I really need is to know that you believe. Well, I wouldn't die for you. Darling, if you want me to, and I wouldn't die for you.
Right. Well, any other way, the Jackie Shane story playing at the Cinematheque, this documentary out now. And I've got one of the directors, Luca Rosenberg Lee, on the phone here to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Luca.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
So I want to, before we get to Jackie's story, I want to talk about your story and, you know, how you got into, you know, documentary filmmaking, you know, how you landed on this project.
Yeah, I loved documentary filmmaking since I was a kid, and I didn't realize that that was kind of a rare thing, actually, until I got older and realized I'd seen probably more documentaries than most people that I was talking to. My parents are both anthropologists, so I guess the idea of studying other people and sort of understanding more of connection through storytelling was something that I grew up around a lot. So I'd make a lot of documentaries as a kid. And then when I was in my early 20s, I thought, you know, I really want to pursue this in a more serious way. So I made a short called Passing, which was about my experience being Black and trans. And that film was, you know, it's very close to my heart. It still is. And people still watch it and they tell me they appreciate it. So I'm thankful for that. And then over the years, I kind of took my documentary making into more of a commercial space. So I do a lot of brand storytelling and I use it in sort of marketing campaigns. But then Michael approached me to help him on this project, and for a few reasons. One of them was because he was going to make it with Jackie Shane, and she passed away before they could go to camera. So he really wanted a Black trans voice involved in the creative. And then he also saw my short Passing when he was looking for people, and he said he just loved it. Like, he loved the storytelling. He appreciated the aesthetic. And so that's kind of how our relationship started.
So he was already in touch with Jackie. And so then that's where those phone calls that are incorporated into the movie come from?
Exactly. So he spoke to Jackie for years. And they had a very close relationship all over the phone because she was very private and she didn't, you know, really let anybody see her. But he tracked her down after hearing her album, and he just thought her story, just the bare minimum we knew of her story, was interesting. You know, black trans woman making music in the 60s, you know, being her authentic self, and then had disappeared for 45 years and people didn't know if she was alive or dead. So for him as a documentarian and writer, he just thought that was fascinating.
So then it's after Jackie passes that he comes to you?
Exactly. So she passed away in 2017, and then he spent a little while thinking about how he was going to make it without her and kind of feeling like maybe the project would never see the light of day. And then after some conversations and bringing in some producers and some funders, he started looking for a co-director, and we connected at the beginning of 2020.
So what is that approach to you? What does it sound like? What is Michael saying to you at that point?
I mean, he said, "Have you ever heard of Jackie Shane?" I said no. And then we realized that that was actually going to be a big benefit to us. And I think it helped shape the film because he had this very intimate knowledge of Jackie and I didn't know Jackie. So that's why, I mean, I hope the film reads for both audiences, because part of the challenge is how do you make a film about someone that very few people know? And so, yeah, he told me a bit about who she was. And as someone who appreciates films about minorities, people, you know, and someone who a lot of their life's work, like a lot of my life's work, revolves around gender and around helping people see that, you know, trans people can be multifaceted, talented people. It just really drew me in, and I thought this is definitely a story I want to help tell.
That their gender identity isn't the only story.
Exactly.
So then it's you're working, you've got Michael who's like intimately knows Jackie's story. You don't know Jackie, and trying to kind of find a middle point from those two perspectives that then is a film that introduces audiences who don't know Jackie, but also satisfies those who are already into Jackie's music and kind of want to have a little more of Jackie's, a glimpse into Jackie.
Exactly. That was the number one challenge, I would say. And on top of the fact that there's no footage of Jackie except for this one video,
the Night Train
exactly
episode.
So all of those kind of came together to create the various challenges of putting the film together.
So how do you go about solving those challenges? Like what are the discussions look like? Were there like abandoned ideas that, you know, like we can't make this work? How do you land on what does work?
Definitely. Like we spent about a year writing it before we, shot. And the idea was, well, let's look at all the plot points and let's find the thread. And Michael had an idea of what the thread would be and the things that were most important. We also had Rob Bowman participate, who was a subject in the film. He was also Jackie's biographer. They were very close. He wrote the liner notes for the Grammy nominated album. And so we knew that there were certain things that we needed to hit or that were very important from a chronological, you know, biographical perspective. But as the story evolved, you know, we were like, we need to give people more than just anything that they could look up on the internet. And part of this story that people have commented on a lot, and I really fleshed it out, was the family relationship, because they didn't know she existed. She had these two nieces that didn't know she existed until after her death. They get this call and they're like, "You're the heirs to Jackie Shane." And so they've got to go take all of her stuff and basically sort through it all, which is how we got that incredible archive. But that added another dynamic, because if she hadn't passed away, we never would have known them. And so the story is about Jackie, and it's about her time in, you know, Nashville and Montreal and Toronto, but it's also about this family who are trying to put the pieces together, and they're trying to understand how this woman was basically erased from their history and their lives, and what can they do to sort of protect her legacy and make sure that, you know, that this type of stuff doesn't happen to people.
Well, unfortunately, as the story is told, like she returns to Nashville because she's got to look after family. And ultimately, there's really only one family member who truly cares for Jackie. And mm-hmm. when that person passes, I think it does make it even more tragic that like the rest of the family erases her and that these, you know, nieces don't know about their aunt.
Exactly. Exactly.
So The decision to get actors to portray Jackie, because you know in a lot of documentaries, if you don't have the subject and there's no like video, it's, you know, those like still photos that, you know, you zoom in and out on, and the talking heads, and that's kind of what you get. The decision to kind of like dramatize Jackie, you've got the audio from these phone calls that Michael did, but then you get an actor to portray Jackie voicing those lines, and then you've got a younger actor playing Jackie performing. When did you land on that?
So the idea to rotoscope the performance was a very early idea, because we wanted to have people be able to feel, you know, what it might have been like. Now, that does require, yeah, getting an actor or someone who could portray it in a way that felt authentic. And hearing some of these interviews with people who saw Jackie live, it was like they talked about it as just some of the best show they've ever seen. So finding someone who could do that was a challenge for sure. So we ended up casting Michaela Walker, who's a trans woman, black trans woman, but who also works as a drag queen. So we knew she could do performance. We knew she understood lip sync, and she had the, you know, black trans experience. So to us, it was that perfect fit, and she really brought it to life. In terms of someone doing the phone calls, Michael had originally hoped, of course, Jackie would sit for an interview, and the recordings were never meant to be used the way that they're used. But because she passed away, we also questioned, would she have ever sat for an interview, knowing how private she was? These kind of casual conversations between friends become the backbone of how we tell her story. And it became more and more clear that we did need someone to be her in a sense, and sort of fill in that part of the imagination for the audience. And so that's how we went to Sandra Caldwell, who is an incredible actress. And she has only recently been open about her transition. She spent most of her life stealth until her late 60s, early 70s, when transness started to become more acceptable. So the fact that she was out and she's, you know, now very open about it, allowed us to say, hey, do you want to do this? And, you know, she was a little hesitant because she's still kind of new to playing trans people, because mostly, obviously, she's going to play cisgendered people because that's how the world saw her. But the more we interviewed her and the more that she kind of saw what she was going to do, she realized, wow, there's all of this overlap. And we weren't expecting that. We weren't expecting her to have also spent time in Montreal and also have come from the States. And so it was just such a gift, I think, for her and for everybody to have like a real emotional connection to what was being said on the tapes. I think it's one of the reasons why it reads so authentically.
Well, one of the things I thought was most fascinating about it was that you get them to portray Jackie, but then you also have them sit down as talking heads of themselves, talking about Jackie, but talking about themselves in relation to Jackie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Like, was that just something that happened naturally, or did you have designs to do that once you'd hired them?
It was something that happened naturally. We had the idea, hey, it'd be great if they sat for an interview. Maybe we'll get something, maybe we won't. And then we got so much more than we could have asked for. The other thing that happened when we went to Nashville and looked at all of her stuff was that her handwritten autobiography was found. And it had a lot of information that was not said in the tapes. You know, it was a much more sort of... it was the side of her that she wasn't very public about, the side that was more having challenges. I mean, we all go through life moments, there's going to be challenges. And she wrote it at a time where she was very vulnerable. And but it gave us a little bit of another side to her. So it became important for us to put some of that in there. And we didn't want to just read in a kind of, you know, actor way, because that would detract from the fact that we actually have Jackie's phone calls. So what we did was we asked people, specifically these two people who were playing her and in their interviews, to read excerpts and comment on what they thought about it. And it turned into some incredible conversations, only some of which is seen in the film.
Yeah, no, I imagine there's lots more within the autobiography, but in terms of the conversation that allows for within the text, right? Like they're basically like responding to Jackie talking about her transness and, you know, existing in a world that is different, but not much different.
Yeah, exactly. It's different in the sense that people know what trans is, but what's not different is the fact that there's still prejudice. You know, there's still misunderstandings, there's still ignorance, there's still systemic barriers to access. You know, I think that's the part that is a consistent, and it's interesting to see these to have had those multi-generational conversations, because, you know, Michaela's about 10 years younger than me. Sandra's, you know, about 20 years older than me. And then Jackie was even older than her. And so to have these, you know, multi-generational conversations about like what Black transness looks like and what it means, and see, yes, these are the similarities, but these are where we've come a long way. And, you know, Sandra even says in the film, you know, could you imagine if she had been free? Like basically saying, could you imagine if she was able to see a time where she could be fully out the way I'm able to be fully out and still live in my authentic artistry? And that's something, unfortunately, Jackie never really got.
Right. Even Jackie, I think in the autobiography, says like, I was born, but I've never lived.
Exactly. Yeah. Born, but I never lived, which, you know, I think, I mean, as I said, we all have moments where maybe we feel that way. But I think from the trans perspective, you know, she grew up in a very particular time. Jim Crow South in Nashville, spent most of her adolescence, you know, in the 60s and 70s, where there was a lot of norms and a lot of expectations and a lot of sort of dreams that for a trans person would have been very hard to access. And so to me, that line of I was born, but I never lived, comes from that idea of like, there were all these things that I wanted as a woman that I didn't think that never happened.
Right. Now you mentioned it. So the performances from Sandra Michaela are rotoscoped.
They are.
What led to the decision to do that? And like what complications or, you know, difficulties did that prove with the production?
Yeah. Like Michael loved rotoscope, and I knew a bit about it too. Like he, you know, the Waking Life and, I guess Scanner Darkly kind of did it as well. Also, it's been around for a long time, even back to the original Cinderella. They used it in some stages. And I guess for anyone who doesn't know, it's the idea that you tape live actors, usually on a green screen situation or really anywhere, and then you paint over that and turn it into animation. So we thought it'd be really cool and creative and looked over a bunch of different styles of animation. And the challenges were like, when it comes to green screen rotoscope, really, you can do anything you want, have any style, any colors, anything could be on the screen. And so for us, it was trying to strike that perfect balance between how do we let the music lead and the performance lead while making it feel like people are there, but while also have a magical, you know, realism element to it as well, where we're not trying to do a full-on recreation and make you think this is real footage, although some people have said that they forget that it's not, quote-unquote, I guess, real footage of Jackie. But so how do we make it feel like that, but not so much so where you don't lose total touch with the fact that, yeah, this is a reimagining of what it would have been like.
Yeah, there's like a hazy, like kind of remembered quality to it.
Yes, right? And so like different styles, different colors to depict different times in her life. And just what different scenes and different moments. We shot a lot of things, and then it was about, okay, how do we fit it into the story?
I have to imagine one of the creative liberties it gave you was like transitions. Like there's a great sequence where Sandra like leans back as Jackie in the chair that she's doing the phone call in, and then she's suddenly in the back of a car.
Yes, exactly. So we had two incredible animation directors, Luca Tarantini and Jared Robb, and they really helped us bring these ideas to life. And, you know, we would talk through them sometimes for hours, for days, to be honest, and talk about the different things that could be done. And then they, you know, take it away and work on something. And then we'd kind of go from there.
Towards the end of the film, there's a like family get together viewing Jackie's stuff that was that arranged by her nieces or by the production or
It was arranged by the nieces, and we were there for days shooting. And at one point, they just said, "You know, would it be okay if some of the family came by?" We weren't expecting 30 plus people, but we said, "Yeah, for sure." And it turned into one of the nicest moments. It was right near the end of the shoot, and it was just so nice because it's exactly what Jackie felt she didn't get, and so to have these past generations looking at her stuff and looking at the pictures, it was that reminder, like, oh no, wait, she did have a whole family, and these people would have loved and appreciated her if they had known that that she lived literally blocks away from them, and that, you know, her history in Nashville really, I hope, is just getting started. I mean, we have a Nashville screening coming up in a few weeks, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how it's received.
You do have an event for Jackie, some clips of it at the end of the film as well. Like, was that something the family did, or you guys did, or independently?
That was something put on by the Jefferson Sound Museum. So one of her really close friends, Lorenzo Washington, who's also in the film, runs a museum that basically commemorates and memorializes Jefferson Street, which was a street in Nashville that was very, you know, during segregation. It was, you know, Little Richard played there, Jimi Hendrix, incredibly popular music zone. And it's where Jackie grew up, and it's where she learned how to play music. And so there's a museum that commemorates that. And, you know, Jackie was one of the people that is very beloved, beloved there. And so we kind of put those together to create this commemoration moment for her.
Speaking of beloved, Lorenzo comes across as one of the most charming men I think I've ever seen on film.
Definitely. So soft-spoken and very, yeah, he's got an engaging quality for sure.
So the film will screen here in Winnipeg through September 15th at the Cinematheque. Usually I interview a lot of artists and I get them to pick a song from the album. You didn't know Jackie beforehand, but was there a song that you grew to love that we can play to close out this interview?
I'd say Raindrops is an incredible Jackie song. And then I guess, I mean, of course, Any Other Way, the namesake of the film, is for sure, I'd say, you know, her biggest song and the one that people remember the most. So either one of those, I would 100% back.
Why not both? Luca, thanks very much for taking some time to talk about the film. Congratulations on its release. Really appreciate you making time.
Thank you so much. You too. Falling in my eyes.
Right along, since that one went over so well, we want to dedicate this to each and every one of you, especially if you're with someone that you want to be with, a thing we call You're the One.
But when you see my baby, this just what you say. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way.
Back here on Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio, right before the break, Any Other Way and Raindrops. That was Luca Rosenberg Lee's selections from the great Jackie Shane. And Any Other Way, the Jackie Shane story, runs through September 15th at the Cinematheque. For more information on that, you can go to umfm.com's playlists, my show notes. I have linked directly to the screening information for the Cinematheque. Strongly encourage you to check out this great film. Learn more about Jackie Shane. Going to keep it on kind of a soul tip here. Jungle just released a new single this week called Let's Go Back, and actually kind of some throwback vibes to it. Can kind of imagine Jackie singing over some beats like this. Then we've got something out of L.A. from Mickey Rose, a single that she sent me earlier this week called Busy Bee. And then American-Canadian singer Aisha Hawes. And then from the East Coast, I got some Alexandre Bergeron. We got more for you. Keep it locked here on 101.5 UMFM.
Ocean free. 6 minutes away, and your ass gets in my place. It's not fine, you lied. I'm tired of the same thing. Cycling motions, resting ocean for you. Now you don't wanna come through.
Enough, enough. Ooh, ooh. Yeah, yeah. you think I don't know, don't forget it, don't forget it. Don't think I never noticed, don't forget it, don't forget it. If you think I don't know, don't forget it, don't forget it. Don't think I never noticed, notice all your patterns. Sorry, I know you done changed. I know you done changed. Your temper's the same. Tip for tap, that's tip for tap. Enough, 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 enough. It's sorry, it's not enough. Sorry, it's not enough.
Enough, enough.
No sorry, sorry. No sorry, sorry.
Enough. What about the touch? What about the sweet touch? what you're asking's way too much.
What about the touch? What about the sweet touch?
There in the air, there's something that you share, a golden road. It takes a hold and then you'll know you're in the sweet spot. You didn't take it all the way, but now you're in a better place. You're better off to stay.
Sweet spot, sweet spot, sweet spot.
You're broke, and it's not even a joke.
Spend all of your time, spend all of your sweet time.
But you're rich, 'cause you found a sweet spot. Maybe it added up to that. You help a friend down on his back, just when he finally painted black. Hank was in the sweet spot.
chasing your trail so long, since I was just a kid. I've been running in circles, I've been spinning my tires. Always been more of the rambling kind. Grass is greener on the other side. I've been over that hill and back a couple of times. Paint me a picture, just give me a sign. Always been more of the rambling kind. When ride from Tulsa across that great divide. Only looking for one thing, a little peace of mind, a little peace of mind. Story where the good guy wins. I've been out here paying my dues, whistling the wind. I've been searching, well, I've been running blind. Always been more of the rambling kind. Well, I've been from Tulsa, that great divide. Only looking for one thing, a little peace of mind. Well, I've been from Tulsa across that borderline. Only looking for one thing, a little peace of mind, a little peace of mind.
Back here on Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. Right before the break, my pal Zachary Lucky, past guest here on the show, back home in Saskatchewan and releasing a new single today called Ramblin' Kind. Wrote a nice post about being as anxious about this as his kids starting school this week. Before that, Peter Elkis with a new single called Sweet Spot. Alexandre Bergeron with Bukhari. That's from the East Coast of Canada. We heard Aisha Hawes, Nikki Lawrence, Mickey Rose, and Jungle in that set. Starting things off for us, brand new Toro y Moi is out today on Dead Oceans. It's called Whole Earth. We're going to hear Undercurrent featuring Don Tolliver and Porches. I've got Posey with a new song featuring Tiet Vien Nguyen. All the Time is from The Garden, which will be out next month. Got a remix of Alice Russell from Sworn Virgins, Camel Power Club, Eli and Fur, some new Caribou, and Bibi Yana. If we can fit something else in before we hand things off to After 8 Radio, we'll do so. You can check out the full playlist on umfm.com. And like I said, there's information about any other way the showings of the Jackie Shane story happening at the Cinematheque downtown through the middle of the month. I really encourage you to check out that film. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back here next Friday.
Show me how to catch the snake. I had this memory. so I got a bum fit on nonsense in a mosh pit. Okay, I'm off it. Yeah, I don't see you like you see through. Okay, you don't hear me too.
We don't gave you everything except that stupid shit you wanted. You think he's gonna be there when you need heat? I done something real bad. I wasn't wearing the champagne necklace and gold trunk bodysuit.
Scraps of plastic bag flags fluttering fitfully on the chain link fence, trying in vain to escape. Absently regards the man taking charge of the fag butts around the swings in the kids' play park as he looks around and pulls up the back of his high vis trousers where a little too much of his red pants are showing. Glancing at the plastic solar powered waving panda on the windowsill, she smiles and raises her tired eyes to the last slivers of tangerine dream clouds fading between the chimneys of the power station. Life is an answer and a question, neither of which are yet clear. Meaning keeps bobbing and weaving around all the silicon-based ephemera before funneling through the celestial spaghetti machine or something and drifting off into the twilight. Checking the hourglass on her wrist and brushing those stray sands of time off her to-do list, she takes a moment to feel the blood circulating through every vein in her body, tracing its convoluted circles into infinity, then goes to make sure she's got clean socks for school in the morning.
monsters alone. I can't fight these monsters alone. I can't fight these monsters alone. I can't fight these monsters alone.
keep up with the space.